I hope everyone is staying safe as our communities transition through this long pandemic. I look back at the past year and wonder how we have pushed to what I'm hoping is soon the other side. It has caused a great deal of stress and stretched us in ways we never knew was possible. Look at all areas of our life that had to be changed whether we wanted to or not. It's daunting to think about how resilient we can be when forced to pivot quickly. Prior to the pandemic, I had the pleasure of having coffee with today's guest. We had a great discussion about many interesting and relevant topics, including her private therapy practice and also the work she does with animal rescue. She is the Compassion Fatigue Program Coordinator at 10th Life, a rescue organization. In her private practice, Paige helps those in the helping profession, including animal rescue workers, with self-care and setting boundaries, as well as leading seminars and offering resources to help build resilience. I'd like to introduce my guest, Paige Lynch of Lynch Counseling. Welcome to the Animal Academy podcast. I'm Allison White, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker who specializes in the human-animal connection. This podcast will showcase professionals who share their areas of expertise in an ongoing series of interviews, and you are there. Their input, stories, and knowledge will help us all understand that we are the ones that actually end up learning from the animals. This is the Animal Academy Podcast. Welcome to the show, Paige. I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
So am I. Thank you so much for having me. I've been really looking forward to this as well.
Well, one of the very first questions I usually ask everybody is, have you always had pets?
Yes. So my mom found our family, like my childhood cat, Sammy, at a pet store when I was two. And she saw him, he was adorable. She left and she couldn't stop thinking about him. So she went back and she picked him up the next day. And so I grew up with Sammy and he passed away when I was 16. And shortly thereafter, we adopted another cat, Celia. And then I always rode horses growing up. And so barns always come with dogs and cats. And so there was a cat that was chronically pregnant. So she was like, I was always having litters. And so I picked out one of the kittens and Shirley is still going strong, 18 years later. My parents still have her and she's super healthy and beautiful. Has no idea she was born at a barn. She's a total princess. So I've always had cats and had my own cats. Constantine and Chester. Constantine passed a few years ago and Chester just passed away this winter.
And it's always hard.
It was harder than I thought after having him in my life for 15 years.
Oh my goodness.
It was really, it hit me in a way that I think was really unexpected. Mm-hmm. There's such a gap because I've always had an animal. Mm-hmm. And I always had Chester, and now we don't have anybody. It's just me and my partner. Mm-hmm. So it just feels really empty.
There's that hole.
It's an absolute hole. Yeah. So we're still healing. And Chester and my partner, Jared, were best friends. So they really, really loved each other. And so it's been hard on both of us to have that loss.
And, you know, yesterday, one of my last podcast episodes went live where I spoke with my nephew, who's in his 20s, and we talked a lot about how his pets, as he was growing up, provided such comfort and a stable force in his life through all of those developmental changes.
100%. I mean, in 15 years, I moved states, I got divorced, I got a new relationship, I started my career, and Chester was just a constant presence in all of it, and a real stabilizing force. We need that grounding when there's a lot of change happening. We need something to come back home to, and I think your animal can really provide that comfort and grounding and reliability.
I've seen a lot of people, and I know everybody has been talking about how they've adopted pets during the pandemic because they needed that calm force, and it's helped people reduce their anxiety level. And also that non-judgmental presence, just somebody happy to see you whenever you come home.
Yes.
Or because we've had to stay home for over a year, you know, somebody that's always happy
glaring
to see
at you from the corner. It's like, what are you doing still here?
I have enjoyed, well, I'll tell you, I have enjoyed all of the Facebook memes or social media memes about cats and how you keep them off of your laptop when you're doing, you know, your work on your computer.
Yes.
It's been hysterical.
Yes, doing telehealth with clients because the pandemic's gone so long. I did a lot of work from home in the beginning. I was out of my office and just at home. So Chester's like little ears would like pop up in like the corner of the screen. People were like, oh, is that a cat? So a lot of my clients ended up getting to know him. And so when he passed, I had to tell, like, there were a couple of clients that part of rapport building was, you know, around animals and getting to know each other's animals. And I had to, you know, tell them, I'm like, look, I'm telling you specifically because I know you ask about him. And I don't want you to ask one day for me to say, oh, he died 2 months ago. It was a really, I think, humanizing, like, element to the therapy that we don't self-disclose a lot. But it was something that I felt like I had to.
Definitely.
Out of respect for other people and respect for Chester because he had a whole fan club.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like I had to, you know, tell people. And everyone was really lovely about it. If the pandemic has taught me anything as a therapist, it's that, you know, when we're all in it together, there's a deeper connection there.
There is, very definitely. And it's something we all can relate to.
Yes.
I got a new puppy during the pandemic. He was being housebroken during all of my daily sessions out of my house. But besides that, you could hear this little barking in the background. And so I warned everybody I worked with, you know, I'm sorry, but this is kind of the reality. You're going to hear some barking and all kinds of like noise. And it didn't bother anybody. At least they didn't say it did. But they were all also asking about him. And then they introduced me to their pets as well. So it became this bonding experience.
Mm-hmm. I've gotten to know so many of my clients' animals. I like know them by name. Like, is that so-and-so in the background? So nice. It provides, you know, levity to a session and it provides, when you have like that inside view into their life that you normally wouldn't have, it makes it a more special experience, I think. And most people are willing to share their animals, which is excellent. So I appreciate that.
And talking about your, you being a therapist, can you tell me a little bit more about your therapy practice?
Sure. So I have a private practice in South City, St. Louis, Missouri, and I work with adults only. And we do a lot of work with family systems and relational concerns, as well as a lot of compassion fatigue and burnout work. I do see a lot of helping professionals, and we're not all very good at it, but a lot of us are getting really good at like seeking therapy ourselves. And so I see therapists and other, you know, various mental health professionals in various capacities. And so compassion fatigue always comes up, and I've seen a handful of people who work in animal rescue. So the compassion fatigue comes up. So I do a lot of work with that, but a lot of it is around interpersonal relationships, setting boundaries, caring for ourselves. I'm kind of quieting some of like the codependent tendencies that some people have acquired over time. So that way they can live a healthier life and still maintain their relationships, just in a very healthy, fulfilling way.
Well, we've talked a lot on this podcast about compassion fatigue because it is a real thing and it's so important to be able to address if you're going to stay in whatever your chosen field is. Even if it's not a field, it's the important work that you're doing as part of rescue organizations, whatever that would be. How would you define compassion fatigue?
Compassion fatigue is secondary trauma. It is the suffering that we experience while caring for someone else who's suffering. It looks a lot like, can look a lot like major depression. You get a lot of like the physical symptoms that are very similar to like major depression or anxiety disorders, like headaches, stomach aches, gastrointestinal issues. You see a lot of isolation. People are not just not excited about their work, but they're dreading their work. They kind of resent their work and everything it's taking out of them. And there's a lot of, I find like hypervigilance and wanting to make sure that like everything is done right for whoever it is that they're caring for and kind of consume them a bit. There just seems to be just like this underlying, like, I just need to escape. I need to get out of this entirely. And just like that flee response. So people end up with this cognitive dissonance where I want to be helping. I want to be doing this. This is my life's work, but I hate it. And it's taking too much out of me. And I don't know how to reconcile the two. And it causes a lot of emotional distress, physical distress, spiritually. However, people define that, just what you want for yourself and what your life's mission is, can really be called into question.
And it's very different from burnout, where with compassion fatigue, if you're like, you know, I just don't need to be in this field anymore, even though your heart is saying that you do, when you leave it, you still feel the same symptoms.
Yes.
For burnout, mm-hmm. You may get energy from a different work.
Yes. I think it's important that, you know, we all know like what our symptoms are, like needing a break or needing to recalibrate. And like, I know that mine personally, and I'll even like share this with clients, like when I'm fantasizing about quitting my practice and working in a, like an indie bookstore that has a cat, then I know I need a break. Uh-huh. So I use that bit of self-disclosure as like, we all have something that ticks us off, that helps us understand, okay, something needs to change. Things aren't working here. Whether that be changing my hours or I feel like I spend my time away from work very like meaningfully anyway, but maybe kind of focusing on that some more, or like re-energizing myself with my work in various ways. So when I start to feel that, I know like if I don't do something about it, it's just going to get worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, and sometimes stepping back from it, you can actually be the observer of yourself and learn to look at your whole situation, your lifestyle. And I've talked to clients about, we used to look at the 8 dimensions of wellness, and that's all aspects of our life, and trying to see where are the weaknesses, where are the areas that I'm not doing much. You know, it could be social activities. It could be financial. And I'll tell you, when I had a sick dog who needed to go through rehabilitation, I suffered compassion fatigue and I felt it. And that's what led me to start doing the trainings. But I had to recover from that too. And I had to look at, okay, which part is really having a deficit? And I stepped away from everything that else that had meaning in my life, stopped going out to dinner with friends because I had to take care of my dog. I didn't eat well. I wasn't sleeping well because I had to get up in the middle of the night to take care of her. And it just made me so drained that I couldn't do anything else in my life. But if you're working in that kind of an environment, I tell clients, you know, be a marathon runner. Look at how marathon runners work, and they feed their soul, but they feed their body and nourish themselves all along the way. We can't treat life like a sprint, right?
Right. No, I definitely had moments with Chester because he was a special needs cat. And there was a summer where he ended up having a really bad upper respiratory infection. And when cats get that, they decide not to eat because they can't really smell their food. And not eating for a cat can turn into fatty liver disease very quickly. And so it can really snowball and become really, really bad very fast. And he was miserable. And I was working community mental health, doing in-home family therapy. And I would like be in home seeing a family, and I'd run back home into the city to like take care of him, try to get him to eat for like 30 minutes, and then run back out to see him. It was
wow.
For like a week I did this. And eventually my poor partner looks at me and he's like, Paige, you're going to get out of the house and we're going to go down the street and get a bite to eat and everything's going to be fine. He's going to be okay. But it was all consuming.
That's your main focus at that time.
Yes.
And there's a feeling like you can only be you're the only one that can save
yes.
this animal, person, whatever. So you work at 10th Life. You're the compassion fatigue coordinator for 10th Life. I had never, before we had breakfast, I think that was a couple of years ago, I had never heard of 10th Life. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
10th Life is such an amazing organization, such an amazing place. They are a cat rescue in St. Louis City that focuses on special needs and stray cats. Since that's our focus, We are not a drop-off facility. We are predominantly foster-based. We do have an adoption lounge where cats live in like a home-like setting, and people can come. We're close to the public right now due to COVID, but pre-pandemic days, people could come in and like hang out with cats, and cats are adoptable, and we have a whole adoption process for them. But we provide all the necessary veterinary care to prevent unnecessary euthanasia. And that's really the mission, is to give cats the lives that they deserve while providing them with the care that they need. And we have really excellent partnerships with veterinarians in the city and around the county, because our fosters are based all over the St. Louis metro area. And we have, you know, some specialty veterinarians that we're partnered with for special, because we have special needs cats, they have specialties. Like we have like a veterinarian that works on eyes specifically. When we have a cat that has, you know, an eye issue, we might have to go see that veterinarian. But we have an excellent, excellent team of fosters, but we're always looking for more. Mm-hmm. So just a shameless plug. If you ever want to foster cats, Tenth Life is always looking for fosters. But we have fosters that specialize in certain things. Like we have a handful of fosters that specialize in neonatal bottle-fed kittens. Mm-hmm. And I love it when their kittens get old enough to come to the adoption lounge, because they're always the best. they're the best kittens. Uh-huh. They're always so well-mannered, and they're so snuggly and sweet. So our fosters raise them really, really well. We do have an isolation space in our basement where we can pull animals directly from animal control or other shelters that need us to kind of step in because they need specialized care. And the isolation space isn't open to the public, but it provides like a very organized, structured place for them to go while we get all their vetting and test for various diseases and illnesses. And we like mitigate the spread of that. So we're trying to expand a little bit into being able to take in more cats that way. So we have really excellent partnerships, like Animal Care and Control in St. Louis County and the city are like really good partners for us. A lot of the other rescues, it's such a small community that everybody knows what everybody else is doing and what everyone's specialties are. So people will reach out to like our executive director or operations manager directly and say, hey, I've got this cat that might need a limb amputated. Can you take them? You know, before we take anyone, we make sure that there's foster space available.
When you talk about special needs, what do you mean by special needs? What qualifies that?
There could be a lot of different things. It could be a cat has feline HIV or feline leukemia. So it could be like a disease or an illness. It could be a pregnant stray cat that will take in and make sure all of her babies are spayed and neutered and she's spayed. She doesn't have to go through that ever again. And they all get cozy homes. There could be animals that are seriously injured. We get a lot of animals that don't need like a limb amputated, a leg or a tail. And so, you know, we'll provide the veterinary care and the respite and the healing and all of that for them. So it could really be like a number of things. So when you come into 10th Life, not all the cats are going to like look like they have a special need. A lot of them, they're all very healthy and they're adoptable. We do have a few that we, part of our Littermates Club, that are going to be in foster care probably for the rest of their lives because their needs are so significant.
Okay.
So the cats that you see like at our adoption lounge, I mean, even if they're, you know, a tripod and they've lost a leg, they're still like running around and having a good time. And like they're bounce back.
Resilient.
They're incredible. I was so worried the first time I saw a cat with a hind leg amputated. I'm like, how is she going to like jump up on anything?
They don't realize
the
it.
The answer is easily. Yeah. Like she'll go anywhere. It's like weird for them at first because they're like, oh, wait a minute. I don't have like all the oomph behind me I used to, but they find it.
They learn to balance.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll have, we have seen a lot of cats with cerebellar hypoplasia. So they're wobbly because their cerebellum is underdeveloped, either from genetic reasons or traumatic brain injury. We usually don't know, but they're a little bit wobbly. So they get around really well, too. So now, sometimes
with some kind of physical rehabilitation, I know that that can be helped in dogs. Can you do that with cats as well?
Yes. And I don't know like all the specifics, but I do know that with some time and working with them, their brain can develop a little bit more to help them become a little more stable. But you don't really know how much better they're going to get or how quickly or if at all.
So if somebody comes into 10th Life and they want to adopt a cat, are any resources available to them once they do adopt a cat? Can they follow the regular veterinarian, I guess, who's been treating them?
Or? Yes, they can. We give them the information for the veterinarian that's been treating them. They can absolutely use that veterinarian or they can use one that they have. One of the questions on our adoption application is, what veterinarian do you use? And do you have animals in the home? We do require that if they have animals in the home, you have to have a veterinarian that you use. We do have certain requirements for adopting because these are our babies that we've spent so much time and love and financial resources on to get them to this like really wonderful, livable place that we have certain requirements. One of those is have a vet if we know that there are animals in the home. If you don't have an animal, you don't have a vet, we'll help you find one. Like you can use the one that we've been using or you can find one on your own. That's okay. We don't expect people to be vetting the vets before they even have an animal, right? But yeah, they get that information. We do have an adopter's Facebook page that it's a closed Facebook page for people who have adopted and they share pictures and stories. And I'm sure I'm not on there because I'm so bad. I've not adopted from 10th Life yet. don't worry, it's in my future. But I've not adopted from them yet. But I imagine they share their resources and help each other out.
Wonderful. So how do you know that you have enough love to give to a special needs animal?
I hear that a lot. When I'm at the adoption lodge and people come in, I hear, what do you mean special needs? Like, what does that mean? And I also hear, how do I know if I have the love necessary? My initial reaction to that is, if you're asking, do I have enough love? You probably have it. Because what you understand is that it takes a lot of love to care for someone else. Even if you have a very healthy cat, like let's say it was, a kitten born from, one of our pregnant moms, nothing's perfectly healthy, no diseases, no injuries, no illnesses at all. He still needs a lot of love because love is a verb. It's what we do for someone else. It's not just the warm, squishy feeling of when he's like curled up in the sun and his little toes are up in the air. Like you get a squishy feeling, but it's what we do for someone else as well. So it really comes down to, do you have a space that's good for them? And quite frankly, a lot of animals that come in from any sort of shelter or rescue environment, even a small bathroom to help them get acquainted is going to be a palace compared to the kennel that they've been in. So if you just have like a nice safe space for them, you don't need like a ton of stuff, right? You don't need they just need a safe room where they can run around and play, where they can scratch things that you don't mind them scratching, like scratching bows. You can provide, the food and water, any sort of medical attention that they need. That's the piece I think that can be tricky for people, especially when they're considering adopting a special needs animal. Like what is going to be the financial cost? That, can vary from animal to animal. And even like your super healthy ones can end up with issues down the line because they live in a body just like we do.
That breaks down.
Bodies break down. Bodies get into accidents. Bodies ingest things that they're not supposed to. Things happen. I suggest that you don't have to be like super well off, but have some income that can go toward medical care, be able to pay their annual veterinary bills and get their shots. Know that if something happens, you might have to spend a couple hundred dollars at the vet for, blood work or imaging or what have you. And that's just the standard level of care.
Are there resources available out there, Best Friends or something? I've heard they have some resources. I don't know how you can access them, but
I'm sure that there are.
And I'd love to look into that, actually.
Yes, yes. I acquired a care credit card when my one cat, Chester's brother, needed a surgery. And it was like $2,000. I was broke. So I acquired the care credit card because it's interest-free, depending on how much you spend, interest-free for like 3, 6, 9, or 12 months. so you have time to, you know, pay it down without accruing interest. And that's helpful. Veterinarians are also, like, at least the one that I had gone to, was really good about offering in-house, like, payment plans as well. So I can't speak for other veterinary practices, but I wonder if that's the case elsewhere as well.
There may be options then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Should something really big happen.
Yeah. And there seems to be sometimes a never-ending need, which can be a little bit overwhelming for people. So to know that in advance, know your own limitations, so you don't end up returning an animal after they become part of your family.
Right. Well, and at 10th Life, when we have a special needs cat, they're not adoptable until we know exactly what's going on with them and exactly how to care for them. And so we also have an idea of what costs could look like if they need a medication for the rest of their life, or they need prescription cat food. We have an idea of what that cost is going to be. So if someone wants to adopt, we can say, okay, this, like, my cat was on, he's diabetic, and so he was on insulin, prescription food. Like, I knew what that cost was every month, and I budgeted accordingly, because there was no way I was giving him up.
Yeah.
Just going to make it work.
I had a dog that started having seizures. Took her to Mizzou. She had benign meningioma on her brain, so did surgery. And that resulted in her, I didn't realize that she'd still have to be on medication every 4 hours. So I thought, ooh, what do I do when I'm at work? So I worked out an agreement with the specialty hospital in town, and it worked out great. And I didn't even think that there would be options, but there are. And you just make it work.
I think you have to not be afraid to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
It does not have to be like a black or white situation where, okay, I'm super flush with money, I can pay for anything, because who has that life? It doesn't have to be, oh, I have to give up this animal that I deeply love. That's my family member. It's okay to ask, because veterinary clinics, hospitals, they feel these questions all the time about payment. It's one of the biggest complaints that they get, is people not wanting to pay for the services or not being able to pay for the services. So if you approach it with, this is a lot of money, how do I make this work? Can you help? Do you have any resources? That is a much more productive conversation than, how dare you charge this much money? I'm not paying for this, where no one's going to want to work with you at that point.
Well, and those kind of conversations I've heard over and over again from the veterinary professionals, that leads to compassion fatigue from their world, because they are there to help our pets. And they will do whatever it takes to help that. But we have to have a meaningful conversation to help, instead of to say, to blame, right?
Right. To come at the relationship as a partnership, that everyone here loves the animal and wants what's best. And so let's work together on making sure that this animal gets precisely what they need. It's not an adversarial relationship.
So what about all of the other animals and shelters that also need to be saved? I know I heard on the news this morning, more and more animals are being turned in for a variety of reasons. That's so sad to me.
That is the question that I think can often lead to compassion fatigue within animal welfare, that no one goes into a helping profession without having a big squishy heart and wanting to do absolutely everything they can. You don't go into it because you don't care. Whether it's your paid employment or a volunteer position or a foster position, like, you go into it because you care. The truth is, there are so many animals out there in shelters. And the other truth is, you can't do everything for everyone. And that's, I think, the big emotional challenge for a lot of people in animal welfare, that you are limited. As one person, you're limited in your resources as an organization. When I do like some compassion fatigue seminars with 10th Life and conversations with volunteers, we talk about just like being inundated on social media with all of the urgent, rescue this cat, he's got 4 hours to live. Like, it's all very like in your face and pulling at your heart. And like, the tone is almost like, there will be blood on your hands if you don't do something. That's alarming. And I understand the urgency of wanting to save a life. And yet, if we don't have really good boundaries, we don't understand that there's only so much that we can do, we're going to slip straight into that compassion fatigue because because there's just so much work to be done. So the answer to like, how, what do you do with all of these other animals? Each rescue has their own mission. Like Tenthoek's mission is special needs and stray cats. So we target who we take in based on our mission. Okay, here's a cat who was hit by a car. They need immediate medical attention. Do we have a foster that can keep them crated and still and knows how to do this? Do we have the space? We'll get the funding. You know, we'll do, you know, like a Facebook fundraiser, or, you know, I'm not up to date on like all like the fundraising development of 10th Life, because that's something that I've chosen not to get into.
Sure. Yeah.
But, you know, if we've got the funding and we've got the foster, we'll take the cat. So you kind of triage according to need and according to resources, that we can't take in every single cat in the city of St. Louis. We don't have the foster system for that. Like, we don't have the space.
Well, and what you said is important, is follow your mission, but also know your personal boundaries. And a few podcast episodes ago, I interviewed a veterinarian with Not One More Vet, because there's a very high suicide rate among veterinary professionals. She actually talked about her own compassion fatigue and realized that she was only going to survive in this field for a few more years at the rate she was going, until she talked to somebody and did the math, and because she's a mathematician, and she said, okay, so if I continue to work in the field for 3 years, this is how many animals I'll be able to treat. But if I stay in the field for a longer period of time, which is kind of my personal goal, then I'm going to do the math. And if I cut back and not work weekends, I'm going to cut back, and that's going to be really hard because I can't treat everybody now. But the longevity of my career means that I'm going to actually work and be able to help more animals. And that was a healthy way to look at that.
Yes, it is. That it is, again, it is a marathon, not a sprint. And you have to pace yourself, and you have to recognize where your own limits are. I know 10th Life is good about, like, they're not pressuring like fosters to do more than what they can do. They're not pressuring volunteers to do more than what they can do. It's a very gentle approach, what I've noticed. And if a foster experiences a loss and they need a break and they need to heal, they're going to get that break and they're going to heal. And it's a community that kind of we gather around each other and help each other out. What I think 10th Life has done so brilliantly is they've created that sense of family and that sense of support that I don't know if other, this is the only animal rescue I've worked in, so I don't know if others have this level of love for one another, but there is a lot of love for one another in 10th Life.
So important.
Right. And it's just created a very healthy place to be. I wouldn't be around this long if it wasn't, because this is a volunteer job. This is not, I'm not getting paid for this. If I didn't love it, I would not spend my time there. So they do a really brilliant job of that. So yes, just understanding your own limitations. If you need to take some time away, you take time away.
And ask for what you need. Ask for the help that you need.
Ask for what you need, yes.
And when I was doing a compassion fatigue presentation for another animal rescue group, this was several years ago, we talked a lot about knowing your limitations, which is what we were just talking about, but also to be able to pass the baton on to somebody else at the end of the day, and don't think that you have to be the one to carry it through the whole way.
Right. You're working as a team. Mm-hmm. And what I think maybe people don't recognize is that every animal that pops up on your social media feed, all the rescues already know about it. Everyone's doing what they can behind the scenes that you don't see to try to save this life. It's already in the works. It's not down to you as the individual at a 9 o'clock, you know, on a Tuesday at 9 o'clock at night to save this animal. Otherwise they die in 2 hours. Like that's not, there is a larger community working behind the scenes. I mean, there are times where tell people rally for a foster, like, hey, we want to try to pull this cat who's available. These are like the potential needs that we see. And someone will say, oh, me, I'll take them. And come to find out another rescue's already done it. Knowing that there is a much broader team happening behind the scenes and that everyone truly is working together. that you're not alone. It's not up to you. It's up to animal rescue at large in the area.
I'm amazed at how many people in the community are actually working in animal welfare. And I had an experience, I think it was last summer because I was doing telehealth out of my house. And my neighbor took a picture of a raccoon that had been sleeping on my roof. And then the raccoon moved to my flower bed. So during the day, they were sending me pictures of where this raccoon was around my property, but it looked sick. So after work, I started making some phone calls. And I said, I just need somebody to look after this raccoon. Not, you know, hurt it, but just... And so I ended up calling County Animal Control, and they came and we had a conversation. And I said, you know, the type of person I am, I want some information afterwards. Can you give me information about where this raccoon is going? Are you going to release it? He said, no, we're going to get veterinary care for it. I was really shocked because we have, and I say we, I don't know, I'm kind of generalizing that to what animal control is about. And this person was very, very helpful. And he gave me a follow-up saying the veterinarian checked it out. So I was talking to somebody the other day, and we have kind of this old idea of some of the Disney movies where it's the animal catcher, that dog snapper, whatever it is, comes and grabs up animals. But it's a little bit different these days. So I'm on the neighborhood, whatever that app is, where people just share. And I've seen...
Oh, yeah, Nextdoor.
Nextdoor, yeah. I've seen so many posts about, there's a cat. Is anybody missing a cat? It looks like it's well cared for. There's a dog, and what do we do with this? And so when somebody finds an animal in their yard, I guess the first step is to call animal control. Is that correct?
You can call animal control. I think that if you're able to track the animal and take it into the vet to see if they're microchipped, then they can be returned to the owner. Like, the vet will contact the owner. And sometimes you get people who are like, oh, thank God for finding my animal, please.
Which has happened to me.
Yes. That's why we get our animals microchipped. All 10-life cats come with a microchip, by the way.
Okay. All right.
So if you can do that, that's great. But, you know, posting on things like Nextdoor, there are lost pets Facebook pages that you can post to, just like any sort of like neighborhood pages. Like, I'm part of like my neighborhood, like Facebook page. You can post it on there because someone could very well be looking. So you can do all of that, and you can contact animal control as well. And they will, you know, do the best they can to locate the owner.
The scariest thing is losing a pet. And my golden retriever got out of my yard several years ago, and I was home. You know, I don't leave my dogs in the backyard when I'm gone, but I don't know what happened. But I got a call saying, oh, are you the owner of this dog? Because the microchip. It happened to be a neighbor who saw him running around, and she said he wouldn't get in the side door of her car because I have a minivan. And so he's so used to getting in the back. So she had to like go around to each door, and then he climbed right in the back because that's what he was used to. Kind of a funny thing about him. But all of my dogs are now microchipped for that reason.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. It's worth the cost.
It is. So Paige, you're a therapist, and also you work with special needs animals. How do you handle your own self-care? How do you take care of yourself?
The need for self-care was drilled in to me in grad school at a point when, you know, when you're in grad school to be a therapist, you're so new and you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. You're like, oh, I don't need self-care. Everything, this is great. And then you like get into the field, you're like, oh, no,
yeah.
this is not great anymore.
I get it.
So I make it a point, like I supervise for licensure. Mm-hmm. So I make it a point to talk to my supervisees that it has to become a part of your job in order to like really make the habit. Like, it's just part of your work. You have to take care of yourself in order to really learn how to do it and to make it a priority. But my own personal self-care is very strong professional boundaries. I only work during certain hours. I only work 4 days a week. I do not answer emails on the weekend. If there's some sort of crisis situation, my clients know that they're supposed to call me and leave a message if I don't answer. Don't just cold call and hang up. Like, mm-hmm. I'm old school. I will listen to my voicemails. Mm-hmm. So I'm very boundaried professionally, and I don't budge on on certain things. Like, I don't work on Fridays. I just don't. Mm-hmm. Unless I'm doing my own like personal self-study that I'm excited about, I'm not working. That's really helpful. And I have it set up that way where I work like Monday through Thursday and I have, you know, Friday through Sunday off. It feels, it's a luxury to be able to do that. But for me, I'm such an introvert that I need space to myself, and I know this about me. My Fridays, I don't do anything for anybody else. Like, it's just for me. Like today's a Friday. I'm doing this with you because I'm super jazzed about it. Like, I was excited to be here.
Excited
and
to have you.
Yeah, this has been lovely. So I'm doing this, and you know, I'll be going to 10th Life and helping some caretaking some cats because that feeds my soul. And it's all about just doing what makes me feel good. Sometimes I go for, you know, I'll walk through the park. Sometimes I'll go take a hike. Sometimes I'll go get lunch for myself. It's just whatever I need it to be that day, whatever's going to help me feel.
So that's incredibly impressive, by the way. It really is.
Oh, thanks.
It is.
It's taken some years to cultivate.
Well, and let me just tell you, I'm a work in progress because I have not achieved that level of balance and I can feel it. So I'm going on vacation in 2 weeks to try to regroup, and then I'm going to reevaluate my hours and things like that because I can feel it in my body when I start getting really tired. And ever since we had to pivot last March in our private practices and have to, within a day or so, go online, it was that fast, and still take care of other people's needs, but also try to take care of our own. And I think the need is increasing because of COVID. I don't know if you felt that, but I've certainly felt that in my own practice. So I think that it does take reevaluation of what our own needs are so we can continue to take care of other people.
Right. And to see self-care is not stagnant. It's not static. It doesn't just stay in place. So your self-care is something that can change with time. So I know that I have cultivated my practice to be able to give me this Friday off to do my own thing. It wasn't always, I don't think I always needed it. And it got to a point where I needed it. So I had to implement for my own like health and well-being. And you know, self-care is so broad that it's become such a buzzword. I think people say, oh, like self-care, I got my hair done and my nails done. Sometimes it's self-care for someone, but self-care to me was taught to me as you need to calm your nervous system. And you need to activate your rest and digest and know how to do that. So that is first and foremost, the most important thing is knowing how to do that. So that's why I will go for a walk. I'll go for a hike. Being out in nature is very calming for me. Light movement calms our nervous system. Meditation calms our nervous system. Deep breathing, you know, some light cardio, light weight training, all of that will activate your rest and digest system. That's what needs to be implemented for me. Like, I know that I need these things. Like, I need a regular exercise routine. I need that Friday off. I need to be out in nature. And if I make sure that I incorporate that as like a non-negotiable thing that has to happen, then I'm in a better place. But I'll say, like, during the pandemic, I'm right there with you when you talk about, okay, well, our entire practice changed overnight. Mm-hmm. It was literally within a weekend. Like, well, I guess now I'm all telehealth. And what platform do I use? And how do I even do this? Mm-hmm.
How do you help people get online if they're not used to, you know, using the internet?
Yes. And luckily, my caseload skews younger. So they're all better at it than I am. So that was helpful. But that changed self-care for me as well, and needing to reevaluate what my needs were, because it's so much more draining to do this job over a screen than it is to do it in person.
Yes, I totally agree. I've felt increased energy since I've started seeing people in my office again, and I have kind of a hybrid model right now based on client choice, and it's really worked out well. And during the pandemic, I have to say, having a puppy was really, really invigorating for me because I could spend time outside, and I, you know, changed my appointment schedule so I could take some time out in between appointments to let him out and enjoy just being outside.
Absolutely. I noticed when Chester passed, you know, during this pandemic, that gap of like, but I have so much love to give. Where does this go? And 10th Life wasn't, you know, we had no cats at the adoption lounge. 10th Life was all foster only for a very long time during the pandemic out of safety. But I was like, what do I do? So I started buying houseplants. So I was like buying houseplants, like caring for houses. I was like, I guess I can do this. Because we're not ready yet to adopt a new cat or to foster or anything. So I was like, I need to like nurture something. And that's like important to me, is to nurture in a healthy way. And so I have thriving houseplants.
That's beautiful. That's great. So Paige, what are your goals for the future?
That is a big question. So when people ask me that, I often think of professional goals because I think it's the easiest. But at this point, I think I'm like, well, I just kind of want to maintain. I'm doing okay. So I think professionally, there are a couple of different treatment modalities that I'd like to be fully trained in and get really, really good at. So I'm looking forward to that. But I think at this point, like my goals are a lot more personal. I think the pandemic has done that, like, and seeing all of like the suffering around the world, and like reprioritize and reevaluate what's important to you. So my goal right now is to travel a lot more than I have. There are places I want to see. There are things that I want to do. We're getting more active in the outdoors, my partner and I. And so we look for trips that involve like getting out on water and kayaking, or getting on some trails and hiking and just like being outside. I want to do a lot more of that. So it's really more about just leaning into what my normal pleasures are, is my goal. And knowing that that will ultimately help me in my practice, that'll help me give back to others, because my well will be full.
So it takes some reevaluation, takes some stepping back from a busy lifestyle to say, okay, what is impacting me and how can I make positive changes for myself so that I can continue to help people?
Right. Yeah. And to not feel resentful of the work. And I want to clarify, I'm never resentful of my clients. Mm-hmm. It's the stuff that involved in work in our fields. Like, yes. I don't want to spend 30 minutes writing case notes at the end of the day, but I do. Yes. And I don't work with insurance for that reason, because I'm not even going to bother.
Ooh, I just felt something when you said insurance.
Oh, what'd you feel?
I'm primarily insurance-based, so I get that.
So like making, you know, all like the businessy end stuff of the work can get really tiring. Mm-hmm. My family is all out of town. They're all in Ohio and Michigan. I'm a transplant here to St. Louis, and I want to be able to get home more frequently. My little brother and sister-in-law just had a baby this winter, and like I am like super ready to just be there and just like watch her grow and be part of her life. And I've finally got my practice to a point where I can take more time off and it's not going to be detrimental to me. So I just want to be able to go and do and have a more full life.
So like I said, I'm a work in progress, so we'll have to touch base and let you know how things are going. Going back to the work with 10th Life, how can others help your organization if they'd like to help? And we're going to go ahead and put resources in the show notes, so if anybody wants to contact 10th Life.
So to help 10th Life, there are numerous ways. So number one, if you want to foster, we're always looking for new fosters, because the more fosters we have, the more cats we can save. So we have a really great foster team that would like walk you through the process, and there's a whole application, and you know, you don't have to do any more than what you're actually comfortable doing. We're very good at like working with you. So you can foster, you can certainly adopt a cat from us. We have our cats up on Petfinder, and you can find that on our website, 10thlifecats.org. And you can donate directly through the website. You can also, we have a lot of like $6 Saturdays. Like if you follow us on social media, we'll often have specific fundraisers for particular cats that come in. Like, okay, we had this admission come in and the veterinary bills look like they're going to be about X amount of thousands of dollars. And so we'll have a fundraiser. So that's always like easy because if you follow us on social media, it's just going to pop up on your feed. And if you want to give like $5 here, $10 there, we'll take it. Okay. We're very happy with that. We also have an Amazon wish list that you can find on our website as well. So you can get in-kind donations that will be shipped directly to our adoption lounge. So during kitten season, which is still going on, it just lasts forever. Like, it just lasts for so long. So we look for milk replacement, a kitten milk replacement. We look for kitten food, mama food, litter, various, you know, supplies, toys, beds, things like that. So if you want something fun, there are fun things on the Amazon wish list. If you want something really practical, there's also plenty of that.
Well, thanks for sharing that. We'll make sure that we put this in the show notes as well. And so if people don't have the ability to take care of their own animal, their own cat, this is a great way to provide support to somebody who really needs something.
Yes. And if at some point it will be safe enough for us to have people back into the adoption lounge. Mm-hmm. And you do not have to adopt a cat from us when you visit the adoption lounge. It's not mandatory. Mm-hmm. So you're welcome to come in and just hang out with cats. Really comfortable couches and chairs, and the cats live in the space. They're out in the open. They all snuggle up with you. You can play with them. So be again, follow our social media, and you can be on the lookout for that for when we do open. And you can get your fix that way as well.
So again, what is your website to 10th Life?
It is 10thlifecats.org.
And that'll be in the show notes as well. So Paige, I've really enjoyed talking to you this morning.
I've enjoyed it as well. This has been really wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Is there anything else you'd like us to know?
I guess the only thing would be if you are struggling and if you're worried that you might be experiencing your own compassion fatigue, reach out to a therapist, if at all possible. A lot of us take insurance. A lot of us have sliding scale. And there are lots of community resources, especially in larger areas like St. Louis has a lot of community resources. But you don't have to figure this out on your own. That there are professionals out there willing and able to help you navigate how to combat compassion fatigue and how to come back to feeling that you have a lot more control and settle in your life.
This time, more than any other time that, you know, in my life, I don't think we realize how the pandemic has really caused a lot of trauma for everybody. And so we do need to support each other and reach out for the help that you need.
Yes. Do not be afraid to ask for help.
Thanks so much, Paige.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Good luck. And thanks for the work that you do. I appreciate it.
You as well, Allison. Thank you.
I really enjoyed speaking with Paige about her work as a therapist and about 10th Life, a cat shelter in St. Louis, Missouri. Their mission is to give cats the lives they deserve while believing that any cat, regardless of emotional or physical limitations, deserves a chance at a fulfilling and happy life. Their large array of services provide wraparound care so cats can recover with the hope of finding a family who will love and accept them despite their limitations. We also discussed compassion fatigue, which has been a topic on several previous podcasts because of the significance and impact it has on so many people's lives. We hear all the time how important it is to take care of ourselves, especially those who are animal or human caregivers. Please stay tuned for future episodes that will address this topic in detail. You can find all episodes at OurAnimalAcademy.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Have a great day and stay safe. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode of the Animal Academy podcast. Detailed contact information and links for each of the guests and resources provided inside this episode can be found at my website, animalacademypodcast.com. I'm Allison White, licensed clinical social worker specializing in the human-animal connection. Let's share and learn from the animals in the next episode of the Animal Academy podcast.